From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. What a show we have for you today. In a matter of hours, president will be indicted. What else is new? We'll talk about what it means for the overall race and so much more. This hour, we're going to be joined by Alan Dershowitz in a matter of minutes to break down this case against him. It'll be about 4 o'clock when he reports. And then at the bottom of the hour, Carlos Jimenez will be here talking about something we should be talking about more. And that is the threat that China gives us, the American people gives us, cyberly, militarily, economically, everywhere we go. They are trying to face off with us, including in space. And these are the types of industries, the types of things we should be focusing on. But instead, we're focusing on, well, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three. Was anything about those relationships inappropriate or unethical?
Nothing was unethical. Here's what the deal. My son has not made money in terms of this thing about, what are you talking about, China. I have not had it. The only guy made money from China is this guy.
Nice try. And that is part of the lying that went on in 2020 that was not called upon by the moderator and was not listened to by his opponent, then the sitting president. Joe Biden's a liar. Once again, President Biden has shown to have flat out lied about his son's knowledge and his role in the Hunter Burisma dealings, as well as what happened in China. As Devin Archer's letter emerges with President Biden's name on it, pointing out in 2020 lies that have not stopped, but even though the Washington Post is now calling him out for Pinocchio's for his knowledge of his son's business dealings. Man, if we only had this type of vigilance when he was running for president, he wouldn't be president.
Number two. When do you expect you will meet that 40,000 mark to get on that stage? Can you give me a timeline?
Gosh, I do. I think it'd be about the next week to 10 days that we'll have that support. We've been averaging about 1,000 contributions a day.
That is Mike Pence, 2024. Trump's titanic lead on the field does not mean Republicans have decided on their nominee. A new poll gives hope to contenders like Mike Pence, who you just heard from, who now is taking a firm stand against the president and his actions on January 6th.
Number one.
Yeah, I think it's a legitimate case. I think, unlike the document case, it's going to have issues of proof. I'm a little concerned about the slippery slope of criminalizing legitimate political activity. Worried about, moving in that direction.
Yes, here we go. Arraignment day number three for former President Trump. Protests, caravans, planes, takeoffs, landings, and 15 seconds of the Trump team proceeding in and out of a courtroom. We've seen this game plan before. And what's pretty consistent after? Donald Trump will make a speech, have a presser, probably make a speech, and his numbers will go up and his fundraising will increase. Joining us now, a man who didn't vote for Donald Trump and probably won't in the future, but understands his case and represented him at least once. Professor Alan Dershowitz, Harvard Law. He also wrote the book, Get Trump, The Threat to Civil Liberties, Due Process, and Our Constitutional Rule of Law. Professor, first off, welcome back. If I told you when you wrote the book that we're looking at 3-4 indictments in a year, would you have thought it would get this serious, this aggressive?
Well, I predicted all 4 of the indictments, and I also predicted, although not in my book, but I predicted that the Hunter Biden plea bargain would not be accepted. The reason my predictions are correct and CNN's are always wrong is they're always wishful thinking, and mine is just based on my experience. I don't have a horse in the race. I just try to predict based on 60 years of doing this. But the main point of principle that I really want to get over is that, and this applies to both parties, the leading candidate against the incumbent president should never be prosecuted by the attorney general of the president.
Of course.
Unless the case against him is overwhelming and beyond any dispute. The Nixon standard is what I call it, that it's so overwhelming that both parties support it. That didn't happen in this third indictment. It's not going to happen in the fourth indictment. It didn't happen in the first New York indictment. It may have happened in the Florida indictment with that one piece of evidence of the president foolishly waving a piece of classified material in front of a writer and a publisher and saying, I could have declassified this when I was president, but I didn't. But the crime there isn't particularly serious. It's a paper technical crime. So I just don't think that they have it enough against this candidate who's now running 44-44 in the New York Times poll to use the criminal justice system to interfere with the election.
And it seems to be something he said a year ago. He says he's going to do everything constitutionally under the law to make sure he is never president again. He actually said that out loud, and it seems to be happening before our eyes while he pretends to be detached, sitting on a beach all for 10 days. So Bill Barr, who's been the target of the president, also a great proponent of the president when the Mueller report came in, taking over Jeff Sessions, said this about Republicans, and maybe you, Alan Dershowitz, have a problem with the indictment when it comes to indicting free speech. Listen to what he said on CNN. Cut to.
They're also saying that he was just exercising his First Amendment right here. Do you think that's a valid argument in your view?
No, I really don't think that's a valid argument because, you know, as the indictment says, you know, they're not attacking his First Amendment right. He can say whatever he wants. He can even lie. He can even tell people that the election was stolen when he knew better. But that does not protect you from entering into a conspiracy. All conspiracies involve speech, and all fraud involves speech. So, free speech doesn't give you the right to engage in a fraudulent conspiracy.
And if I could fast forward, I think he's talking about the electors in Michigan and Georgia and places like that, maybe Arizona. Your thoughts on Bill Barr's assessment?
Well, I like Bill Barr. He's a good man, but I think he's just dead wrong about that. Of course, this is a free speech case. Everything involves his exercise of free speech, and not only First Amendment free speech, but also the First Amendment right to petition the government for redress of grievances. The way you protest an election is to come up with an alternate slate of electors. That was done in 1960. That was done at Tilden Hayes' election. That's been done throughout history, and a court in Hawaii said that's the right way to do it. It's interesting that the indictment is based on lies, and the indictment itself contains a blatant lie by Jack Smith. He describes the speech of January 6th, a speech that I think was terrible, never should have been made. But he describes the speech in the indictment and deliberately and willfully leaves out the key words of the speech, namely that the president told his people to protest peacefully and patriotically. By leaving out those words, it's a lie by omission. And under the standards set out in the indictment, you know, Jack Smith could be indicted. He could also be indicted, theoretically. It's not going to happen, obviously, under the Ku Klux Klan statute. The Ku Klux Klan statute says any people who conspire to deny somebody their constitutional rights is guilty of a crime. Well, what if the Supreme Court ultimately rules, as distinguished from what Barr said, that everything that Trump didn't say is protected by the First Amendment? That would mean that Jack Smith tried to deny Trump his constitutional rights in this indictment. I make that point not to argue that Jack Smith should be indicted, of course not, to make the point that the indictment is so broad, so wide,
right,
so all-encompassing. It can include so much political conduct. We have two presidents in our history. Of all of our presidents, only two have been called honest. Honest Abe and Washington and the cherry tree. Does that mean that every other president has been dishonest? Probably. Probably every single one of them is told a fib to get elected or to stay in office. And we don't punish, we don't criminalize political lies. And the government's going to have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Trump himself knew and believed that he had lost the election. I don't think anybody who knows Trump thinks that that's true. Trump talked himself into believing that he had won the election. And if that's the case, then there's no corrupt motive or intent.
I agree. Listen, Alan, you know him. He respects you. You'll tell him over and over again, I didn't vote for you. He's like, I don't believe you. So you get along. You represent him. I have never had a moment when I've talked to him since the election. And I was the only one to do an interview with him after the election. And he has never, in a quiet moment on air, off air, radio, TV, said that he didn't win. In fact, he gets mad at you. He goes, I know you don't believe it, but you know I won that election. I know you don't want to follow who won the election. I go, I just don't see any proof that you might have won. I don't know. And we go back and forth. And to the point where I know somebody that toured with him last summer, and he said he wouldn't stop. He wouldn't stop off camera, and the crowd didn't even react. So he would say it, and people weren't even supporting it. So for you to put that in the document that he know he lost the election, I think is farcical. What do you think the significance is? Is they didn't put in conspiracy, and didn't say he caused an insurrection. Do you think those charges could be coming, Or do you think the fact that their absence is significant?
I think the absence is significant. And I think, you know, obviously, Jack Smith, who's a smart prosecutor, very clever, creative prosecutor, knows that the speech itself was protected by the First Amendment. What he said, he wanted people to go to the Capitol and protest peacefully and patriotically. That protects the speech under the First Amendment. So I don't think we're going to see any insurrection or any incitement, because he didn't incite. He just advocated. And there's a difference. Under the First Amendment, I do think that this is not the kind of case that should ever be brought against the man who is running against the incumbent president. That's what they do in banana republics. The incumbent president gets his attorney general to indict his political opponents. And that shouldn't be happening in America. If it meets the Richard Nixon standard, you know, so obvious, so evident that crimes were committed, that both parties agree with it.
Right.
And you know, if Trump were caught really giving a bribe or taking a bribe or doing anything like that, a lot of Republicans would have agreed that he should be indicted. You know, I spoke recently at a Republican club in Aspen, Colorado, and I spoke in a number of places. I hardly met any Republicans who actually supported Trump's presidency. There's a lot of opposition to Trump's presidency among moderate centrist Republicans, but they're also are strongly opposed to the weaponization of the criminal justice system against him, because, you know, today it's against Trump, tomorrow it's against Biden. They're trying to impeach Biden for non-impeachable offenses, and the day after tomorrow it's against you, and then it's against me. Look, already the 65 Project has come after me because I defended Donald Trump. They filed bar charges against me baselessly, and they've gone after every lawyer. And now five of the lawyers are characterized as unindicted co-conspirators in this indictment. That sends a terrible message to lawyers. Don't get near Trump. Don't defend him. Don't give him advice. If you do, you may find yourself on the wrong end of an indictment.
Look, so Professor Dershowitz, you saw that his lawyer was forced to testify against him. They said they claimed that he was involved in a illegal activity, I guess, hiding the document. So next thing you know, his lawyer's testifying against his client. We haven't seen that. I have never seen that in my life.
I taught ethics at Harvard Law School for many years, and I just don't see a basis for claiming that that violates the privilege. Every time you have a meeting with a client, they always suggest things that might be criminal, and you tell them no. That's the essence of the lawyer-client communications. I mean, I've had so many cases where a client says to me, wouldn't it be better if I go to Brazil? No, it wouldn't be. They'll catch you. They'll bring you back. Wouldn't it be better if I paid this witness? No, they're going to get you on obstruction of justice. But those conversations occurred, and they're privileged. And the judge was wrong in suggesting that that privilege didn't apply. Look, we have two laws in America, the laws for most of the rest of us and the laws for Donald Trump. That's why I wrote my book, Get Trump. It's all about this selective approach and prosecution of one man, Donald Trump.
Gotcha.
Understandably, Donald Trump has, you know, caused some real damage to democracy in America. That's why I vote against him, and that's why I'm going to continue to vote against him. But I'm going to continue to defend the Constitution. I'm not going to let the sacred Constitution that I've been defending for 60 years to be put in the gutter because Democrats think it gives them an advantage. In the same way, I'm not going to allow, without comment, the Republicans to impeach Biden.
I agree.
Biden may have done some wrong things, but he hasn't committed any impeachable offenses, at least up to now.
Professor, I want you to hear Bill Barr again take this case on. Cut one.
Yeah, I think it's a legitimate case. I think, unlike the document case, it's going to have issues of proof. It's a more complicated case. And I think there are some downsides to it. I think there were reasons not to bring it. I've said before, I'm a little concerned about the slippery slope of criminalizing legitimate political activity. I'm worried about, you know, moving in that direction.
Do you think it's something you would have brought?
I don't know if I would have approved the indictment, but as a legal matter, I don't see a problem with the indictment.
So he kind of hedged on both things, but he does see problems with it. But of course, there was no follow up. What do you mean the problems? But go ahead.
Well, I think he makes a point distinguishing between whether it's a legally sound indictment, and reasonably you could argue about that, but whether it should have been brought. No, it should not have been brought. And the proof, the evidence problem is going to be severe. You know, they brought Jared Kushner into the grand jury, and CNN immediately announced, oh, Jared Kushner has flipped against his father-in-law. He's going to be the smoking gun. Well, he testified, no.
I know.
My father-in-law said, I believe it. We told him it wasn't true. But he insisted on saying, I believe it. So I don't know where they're going to get the evidence, the smoking gun evidence. They have smoking gun evidence in the document case, that video of waving the classified material. But it's not that serious a case. But in this case, which is very serious, I just don't see where they're going to get the evidence. Maybe they'll flip somebody. Maybe they'll get somebody to say, oh, yeah. After he thought nobody was listening, he admitted to me that he knew the election was fair. Now, I don't think that's going to happen because I don't think that he ever thought the election was fair. I think he was wrong. But under the First Amendment, you have the right to be wrong. New York Times versus Sullivan establishes the principle that newspapers and certainly politicians and certainly in criminal cases can't be prosecuted or sued for being wrong. You have to prove that they did it with malice. And I don't think they're going to be able to prove that against Donald Trump.
Professor, no better guest to start the hour with. Thanks so much. Go out and get his book, Get Trump, and understand the mission behind it. And it doesn't matter who you voted for. There's right and wrong. And this is a distraction for what the country really needs. We have real issues. We saw what happened with our debt. We see what's going on with the China challenge. And all we do is keep suing each other and trying each other. Thanks so much, Professor.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll kind of come back and take some calls. And then at the bottom of the air, Carlos Jimenez will join us from Florida. I cannot wait to talk to him. Don't move.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We just have to demonstrate that he will not take power. If he does run, making sure he, under legitimate efforts of our Constitution, does not become the next president again.
Is that okay with you? The current president, 2022, a year ago roughly, coming out in a press conference, one of his few because he can't really speak well and doesn't really know his issues too well, he came out and said what everybody was thinking. Are you guys going after him just because you don't want him to be president? He said it. And what do we have a few years later? Donald Trump, third indictment. This is the first time on something he did while president, even though it was the end of his presidency. Verse two, one after, one before. And then the next one will be Georgia, which will be technically when he was still president. And there's so many problems with these cases. If you think there are anybody who tells you on any channel, that he's going to be off easy or convicted easy is just flat out wrong. I talked to all these legal scholars. I am not one. But the good news is almost I have access to a lot of them. People have huge problems with this 45-page indictment. They want to know why it was rushed, because it's not done. And they also want to know why it took 2.5 years to come up with something that doesn't have the biggest charges, conspiracy and insurrection. They could not find that Donald Trump was behind anything.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
When's the last time that the PRC asked for a high-level meeting with a senior U.S. government official?
Well, Congressman, the engagements that we've had, those have been reached by mutual agreement. We issued an invitation. It was up to them to tell us whether they wanted to accept or come, and they came. Or they indicated they would like to.
Secretary, that's not... I'm asking a different kind of question. You're giving me a different kind of answer. So doesn't it seem to you like that may be looked at around the world as a sign of weakness that we are the junior partner?
Respectfully, sir, I completely disagree.
I don't. I agree with the questioner who happens to be my next guest. And I'm not just saying because he is. Congressman Carlos Jimenez of Florida joins us now from the 28th District, House Armed Services, Homeland Security, and China Select Committee. And it's a major concern, but a unifying cause, China. Everywhere you look, they're challenging us. And we're up for the challenge. I'd much rather take our system. But we got to actually face the challenge and acknowledge it. And that's what the congressman's trying to do. Congressman, how significant was that exchange? And do you think you made your point to the assistant Secretary of State for Far East Asia, Daniel Crittenbrick?
Did I make my point? Yeah, I made my point.
Do you think it landed?
Do you agree with it?
Yeah.
It landed, but he's never going to, acknowledge it. I mean, he tried to go around and around because actually, it was a pretty simple question. When was the last time that they asked us for a high-level meeting? And he responded by saying, well, they said yes to us inviting them. So, that's not the same thing. We didn't initiate it. We initiated a please come over kind of thing. And they said, okay, we'll come over, but never, he couldn't even tell me when's the last time that they initiated something like that. And then it looks around the world like we're always begging to please allow our Secretary of State to go to China. Please allow our Secretary of Treasury to go to China and see you because we really want to see you. And then they acquiesce and say, yeah, okay, we'll allow you to come over here. And so, yeah, it looks to the world like they're the senior partner. We're the junior partner. We're begging China to allow us to do this and that. And then we're asking China to come over here, and they're not the ones initiating that at all.
Congressman,
so,
let's just think about this. They took out our drone, multi-million, $130 million drone, did the Russians. The Russians were also buzzing our planes in Syria for no reason, and most of them are drones. And then we have China interdicting our destroyers and also buzzing our planes over China. Then they send a spy craft over our country, and we're begging them for a meeting? Really? We still don't know why the thousands well-dressed Chinese are deciding now is the perfect time to stream through our borders. I don't really get that. I'd hate to live in China, too. But why now? So why wouldn't we look weak? We put all this money into the military, and we're allowed to look like meek players on the world stage. And our allies are wondering, do we really have their back?
Well, I hope, look, this is a very dangerous time for us. We need to step up militarily. The good thing about the China Select Committee, it's bipartisan. And while we may not agree on what we need to do about it, I can tell you that yes, the bipartisanship there, at least the Democrats see the threat coming from China. At least most of them see the threat that's coming from China. And when we've got to take steps to confront that threat, one of the things that I want to do, I'm much more hawkish about decoupling from China. Look, every dollar that we spend in China, every time that we spend a dollar for a Chinese product, et cetera, is undermining U.S. interests. Every Chinese company is, by their law, mandated to cooperate with the PLA, the People's Liberation Army. So if there's any technology that's a benefit to the PLA, that Chinese company has to turn that over to the PLA. We're looking, Chairman Gallagher just asked BlackRock and MSCI to come before the committee because we're finding that your money, my money, if we're invested in 401, K and index stock and index funds, et cetera, and BlackRock, we just took a sliver of some of their indexes, index funds, and we found that there was $500 million in American money going to Chinese companies that are actually blacklisted, that were investing in blacklisted Chinese companies. Our money, American money, pension money, et cetera, is being invested over there. We have to stop it, and we have to stop it like right now. We can't make them continue to make them stronger while at the same time the world looks at us getting weaker.
So I wanted to hear Mike Gallagher, who's chairman of the Select Committee, said this, running through with BlackRock's disturbing behavior, and hopefully you guys are going to start your investigation in your hearing soon. Listen.
We found that MSCI and BlackRock have invested in companies that produce the CCP's military aircraft, its aircraft carriers, its aerospace technology, its artillery shells, and even its advanced nuclear technology. They've invested in companies like BGI Genomics, which collaborated with the Chinese military to collect genetic data on foreign persons without their consent, and other companies found to be complicit in supporting forced labor and human rights abuses in China. Your pension, your kids' college endowment should not be funding America's foremost adversary, and that's what's happening. We are at risk of funding our own destruction.
So he was just running through it. I know you guys have great mutual respect for each other, and I am encouraged by the bipartisan nature of your approach on China. And And I do hope that you guys both hold these BlackRock executives over. But Jamie Dimon came over and is talking about being a bridge between the countries. Elon Musk says, you know, has pledged basically allegiance to the country because of Tesla. And I know he's done some great things for the country, but this is really disturbing. But they feel as though they can bypass the government if they get to the business. And they go, well, you guys want to do business. So they're bypassing this stuff. And they're going to people that are driven by the capitalist principles of the almighty dollar. And I get it. But there has to be, you have to be a patriot first. How can we do, do you have to create laws? Or can you talk, get through to people that you're an American first?
Unfortunately, I think we're going to have to create laws. I don't think, look, we had a hedge fund manager in front of the our committee a couple of weeks ago, and he was very, he was very specific. He was not going to be investing in China. He wasn't going to be investing in areas, you know, that promote human slavery and incarceration and violates human rights, and also is helping, you know, create a powerful military. And so he wasn't going to be doing that. But I asked him if he was the exception or was he the rule. His answer was pretty interesting. He said he would hope that he was the rule. He was hoping that he was the rule. I would guess that he's the exception. And so we're going to have to take matters a little bit into our own hands, and we're going to have to start putting rules down and laws down that will prohibit this kind of investment. It's just, it's, you know, it's our self-preservation, man. And it makes absolutely no sense that we continue to fund the instrument of our demise, just like Chairman Gallagher said. I've been saying that from the get-go. There's some people in the committee that think, well, you know, we have to have strategic decoupling and all that. And yeah, I understand strategic decoupling. No, I think we need to decouple, period. And we need to move. We need to start buying things from our neighbors down in Central and South America, incentivizing those areas to create, you know, new jobs, new factories, so that the people there have work. And by the way, you know what that does? That eases the strain on immigration also, because if you actually have, you can make those countries better, improve the quality of life in those countries, they won't have to leave those countries and try to search for a better life here in the United States. And at the same time, we are weakening our main adversary, which is China. China is not like the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union was a third-rate economic power, where they now we're finding it's really a second-rate. At the time, we thought it was a first-rate military. China is a first-rate economic power that wants to become a first-rate military power. In fact, they want to overtake us economically and overtake us militarily and become the dominant force in the latter half of this century. We cannot allow that. We cannot live with the morals and the principles of the Chinese Communist Party. Look what they're doing to their own people. They will do that to us. They will do that to the rest of the world. We need to bring our partners along. People are starting to wake up to it. We need to get Europe to wake up and stop, you know, doing business with the Chinese. By the way, doing business with the Chinese eventually is going to bite you anyway. And so those companies now, Elon Musk and Apple and all those people that are there now, you know, they need to wake up to the fact that one day you're not going to have that company. They're going to take it over. When they feel in their best interest they don't need you anymore, they'll throw you out.
They absolutely will. They'll steal your technology ahead and sue them. Congressman Jimenez is with us right now. Congressman, a couple other things. By the way, just to our advantage, China right now has an unemployment problem with its next generation. They also have an issue where President Xi is gaining so much power. He's getting rid of any free market principles that propelled them over the last few years. And believe me, there has been some. And I think a lot of our allies are waking up to the evils of the Belt and Road program, including Italy, who is indicating they're looking to get out of it, as in many of these countries in Africa who took the short-term money and realized they're losing their airports and ports. I want to fast forward and talk to you about 4 o'clock today. President Trump will be indicted officially for the third time, and all these breathless reports will happen. But the other thing I'm keeping an eye on is the Washington Post today acknowledged something you and I have been knowing for a long time. Obviously, President Biden lied when he said he knew nothing about Hunter Biden's overseas business dealings. Obviously, he lied in the debate when he came out and said his president, Hunter Biden, has no investment in China. And now the Washington Post fact checker, Glenn Kessler, says Biden said his son earned no money from China. That is four Pinocchios. His son said otherwise. Biden's assertions have been directly rebuffed by Hunter himself and by Devin Archer. We know that he's gotten millions. He went over there to start his company. He came out of there with millions of dollars. He traveled on Air Force Two. Devin Archer testified behind closed doors. That transcript is now out. So we see that he lied about the 51 Intel experts saying that the laptop was not real in that debate. He lied that his son had no overseas business investment. That is indeed true. And he lied to in a separate one in the debate. He basically said it is not true 8 times that his Trump's assertions that he had overseas business dealings with the Moscow mayor's wife and everything like that. So even the Washington Post is waking up to this. At the same time, you have President Trump being indicted. Do you believe will be the effect on the first the primaries and then the election if this continues?
Well, in the primaries, I think every time they indict the former president, he actually gets stronger with his base, because we see the double standard. We see the unfairness of it. Look, it doesn't go unnoticed that every time that something bad comes out about Hunter Biden and President Joe Biden, the next day President Trump is indicted on something or additional charges are added. And then these charges that came up, they don't even charge him with inciting the January 6th riots. They incite him for free speech aspects of what he said, that he believed that the election was stolen, and that he has every single right to question the integrity of our election process. Look, hey, Stacey Abrams in Georgia did it, and what happens to her? Well, she gets to play the president of the world on Star Trek. President Trump does the same thing about his election, and he gets indicted. It is a double standard, and we see it. Look, the thing about President Biden, why is anybody surprised that all this is a bunch of lies? Joe Biden's been lying for 40 years, okay, since he ever got into office. Whatever Biden says, whatever he says, he's doing the opposite, all right? He's a pathological liar. His administration is full of pathological liars. And so I don't believe anything that comes out of his mouth. I don't believe anything that comes out of anybody that works for President Biden. Right. You know, you got to see exactly what they're doing. And so, in the general election, the theory is that this is going to be, death by 1,000 cuts. But I think the American people, look, we have to continue our investigation into Hunter and Joe Biden. By the way, this is about Joe Biden, who's the current president of the United States, who I believe is compromised, who I believe has taken bribes, has guilty of impeachable offenses. But we have to continue diving into it, getting additional evidence so that even the Washington Post, the New York Times, CBS and NBC and ABC are going to have to start saying, well, we've got to start to take a look at this because we're starting to look foolish. And then once we do that and we get the American people say, yeah, OK, you're right. You were right all along. This president is guilty of impeachable offenses. Then we move forward. I think that, our speaker is on the right track. I think Jamie Comer and Jim Jordan are on the right track. We need to uncover more because there is more. And so more to the point where people can't ignore it anymore. Not even people on the left can.
Front page of the New York Post today, a letter from President Biden, then Vice President, to Devin Archer, going to prison for embezzlement and all types of horrendous financial crimes. But went behind closed doors with you guys on Monday and sat for an interview the New York Post got, and he sat with an interview yesterday. And one of the things they have produced from that interview is a letter from Vice President Biden saying, I want to apologize for not getting a chance to talk to you at a luncheon yesterday. I'm having trouble getting away from hosting President Hu, the president of China. He's trying to get away from to talk to Devin Archer, just like his son was blitzing a energy executive in China because evidently he didn't get back to him quick enough, saying his dad is sitting right next to him. He said, glad you and Devin Archer, you and Hunter are working together. He writes in hand to Devin Archer. And what they had is understanding the regulatory process in Washington. Basically, what they had is access. That's what the Bidens had with their hedge fund. Devin Archer admitted to it. He produced a letter. So will Joe Biden ever sit down and be asked why he lied?
Well, look. Do I have faith that the current the press outside of certain outlets like Fox and maybe Newsmax and stuff will be asking, and then the New York Post, which by the way, the New York Post has done an unbelievable job with his entire story, has been on the front end of this. So, Outside of that, no. I mean, you know, you give me hope. I haven't read the Post today, so
yeah, front page.
I mean, the Washington Post, right? The Washington Post today, and so you give me hope that maybe, just maybe, you know, maybe we'll get some journalistic standards.
Well, Congressman,
if this was Trump, if this was named Donald Trump, and that was
Eric.
Donald Jr.,
yeah.
they'd be all over this, all
Congressman.
Over
and I have to go. I'm up against a break, but the real important thing for the country is what you're doing with China. This stuff just hurts our country, but it has to be done, yes. I guess, on both sides. That's the intramural game we're playing right now. Congressman Carlos Jimenez, thanks so much. Back in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
China ate your lunch, Joe, and no wonder your son goes in and he takes out billions of dollars to manage. He makes millions of dollars. And also, just out of curiosity, the mayor of Moscow's wife gave your son $3.5 million. What did he do to deserve it?
Says it's not true. It's 100% true. And the follow-up was, it's your family that took money out of China. Not true. And by the way, as I said yesterday, if you want to know where a Trump building is or investment is, look at the front of the building. He doesn't hide any of it. He loves it. He owns a building. He's in business. Like, I don't have a problem with Jared Kushner. He was in business before. He was asked to join an administration, made about $100,000, didn't take a dime, almost went to prison for doing nothing. And then with some of the contacts he made in politics, he went into business, not lobbying. He went in, and I guess he impressed some people in Saudi Arabia and got some business. It wasn't anything to do with policy. Oh, yeah, I apologize. He might have actually produced the biggest boon for peace in the Middle East in history. And that's the Abraham Accords. And if it wasn't for Saudi Arabia's cooperation, as much as you might dislike them, and there's a lot to dislike, if it wasn't for them, you don't have the Abraham Accords, which might have done more for Israel's safety, too, than anybody else. Letting everybody know they are not the problem in the Middle East.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. We come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Let me see. What are we at? I think 10 blocks from the Roosevelt Hotel. And the Roosevelt Hotel is significant because it is now teeming with illegal immigrants. Not the only place that's teeming with illegal immigrants, but I think it's important to know that that we have a national problem right in New York City, and that is the amount of illegal immigrants in our country that we can't put anywhere, we can't afford to keep, and this is Democratic mayors who have nowhere to go. So I come to you from 48th and 6th. Okay, one block from the Row Hotel, which is also overrun with illegal immigrants, a national problem at our border. But I digress. With me in studio is John Levine. Also coming up at the bottom of the hour, Bruce Blakeman. We're going to talk about the serial killer in Nassau County, and then we'll do a simulcast with Stuart Varney. One of the things we're going to talk about is Bidenomics not working according to the Fitch report, which downgraded our credit, and the Wall Street is not reacting positively, predictably. So, John, welcome. Everybody knows you've been covering the Hunter Biden case from the laptop on down.
Thank you.
And, man, this has hit warp speed since, as everyone focuses on 4 o'clock today, a third indictment for President Trump. What are you focusing on?
Well, there's so many different threads of Hunter Biden to keep track of. Obviously, there's still – this feels like a million years ago, but there's still the plea deal we have to still keep in the back of our minds. His legal team and the Justice Department are negotiating a new plea deal. Obviously, Judge Nerica threw that out in Delaware last week. Feels like a year ago. So that's going to be something to keep an eye on. Obviously, Devin Archer is still is clearly on some kind of a media tour before he reports to prison. Hopefully he'll be able to shed more light on exactly who Hunter Biden was calling when he would call back to D.C. on behalf of Burisma. Obviously, wink, wink, nod, nod, we can kind of surmise who he was calling. You know, who are his connections there? There's really only one connection that matters. I think continuing to mine Devin Archer, right, and then also the Oversight Committee. I would say they're still talking to business partners. They've been in contact with Eric Schwerin, the CEO of Rosemont Seneca, the investment firm that both Hunter and Devin Archer worked at. He would be another major, major get from a business partner standpoint who could shed much more light on all the activities and Joe Biden's involvement. And I don't know what the current status of him is. He's been working with the Oversight Committee. They keep sort of being like, yeah, we're working with his attorneys. But eventually I'm told he is cooperating.
But I think it's important for people who are undecided independents, who have three jobs, three kids, going 100 miles an hour, how much hotter the water's getting and how much is accelerated. It went from the laptop's not real, I swear it is, to it is real.
Yep.
And look at the communication in it. Man, that's pretty damning. And we see some indications of 10% for the big guy. And we see indications of him with an email to his daughter saying, I never will do to you what Pops does to me. Right. And that is making me the breadwinner of the family and making me basically pay all the bills, as I paraphrase. And then we have Donald Trump accuse Hunter Biden. You know, we see all this stuff in there. He thinks the whole laptop is real. Right. And he accused him. He says, your son is doing business in China on your behalf. Your son is doing business with the Moscow mayor on your behalf. Your son is on a board in Burisma in Ukraine. You're making money. This is the Biden family. No, it's not. So I want you to listen first. Before we get people all caught up in the minutia of it, in October of 2020, all these facts were out there, but no one acknowledged them. So we know now that as of the last few days, you knew for a while, John, we knew that Hunter Biden made millions of dollars with China. And now if you hear the Devin Archer, his business partner interview, they go to China to really form their company and they come out with millions of dollars that's going to invest in various complex hedge funds around the world, including in Moscow, Ukraine, in Kazakhstan and others. So listen to this exchange in October of 2020. Cut 18.
In retrospect, was anything about those relationships inappropriate or unethical?
Nothing was unethical. Here's what the deal. My son has not made money in terms of this thing about what are you talking about? China. I have not had it. The only guy made money from China is this guy. He's the only one. Nobody else has made money from China.
Really? So how wrong is that? He knows it's wrong.
Yeah.
He knows that he just wrote a letter on the cover of the New York Post today, your newspaper, John, that said what? That said, hey, a message from Vice President Biden to Devin Archer. Hey, Devin, sorry I was unable to get away from President Hu of China to talk to you. Congratulations on your business with my son, Hunter Biden.
He was so proud of his son. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. You go back to 2020, again, millions of years ago, and this was Russian disinformation. This was, you can't believe this, Vladimir Putin just handed this over to the New York Post. And now you see Karine Jean-Pierre saying, you know, well, the president was never in business with his son, which, of course, is an update from her earlier statement, which he's never had any involvement in his son's overseas business.
Or knowledge.
Or knowledge. So the goalposts keep changing in very subtle ways, and they claim they're not changing. It's really, I'm going to use a technical term, it's gaslighting of the American public. And who knows what the goalposts will be in 6 months as we begin to uncover more and more information.
So think about this. Devin Archer says that at least 10 times he called into the middle of business meetings and he knew he was calling in and he put him on speakerphone.
Yeah.
Devin Archer admitted that his business was about navigating the regulations and machinations inside Washington, D.C. And the follow-up question was, you're talking about lobbying influence,
the regulatory environment.
That's a great term. And guess who has that access?
Yeah.
Not Jim Biden, Joe Biden.
That's right,
Vice President.
The regulatory environment in the White House. Who is my father? Yes.
Here's
the
follow up in 2020. Cut 19.
Once you
none
became
of that
Vice President,
true.
He made a fortune in Ukraine, in China, in Moscow,
that is simply
and various
not
other places.
True.
He
my
made
son,
a fortune,
gentlemen, my son,
and he didn't have a job.
Before I even have you comment, John, because I know you're seeing cut 20.
China ate your lunch, Joe, and no wonder your son goes in and he takes out billions of dollars to manage. He makes millions of dollars. And also,
simply
while we're at
true.
It, why is it, just out of curiosity, the mayor of Moscow's wife gave your son $3.5 million. What did he
true.
Do to deserve it?
Everything Trump said there was true. It was based on the factual reporting of the New York Post exclusively at that time. Now a lot of other people have gotten into the coverage.
At the time your Twitter account was suspended.
At the time Trump was saying that, it was only the New York Post covering it. Everything he said was true. Everything we reported was true. everything President Biden said was false. And that was allowed to stand because the rest of the media environment in this country and the moderator, Kristen Welker, who's a longtime Democrat, you know, move along, nothing to see here, allowed it to stand. And they basically covered for him, and they didn't want to know. They didn't want to look into this. They just said, well, you know, New York Post, can't trust them. Shut it down until after the election. After the election, then maybe we can start to probe some of this stuff, as we have been doing now. But it's very
Washington
sad.
Post, referring back to this, knowing the facts that we know now, right. Did a Glenn Kessler looked at that, gave him four Pinocchios for lying about all his business. And I put it in front of you. You didn't even see it yet. It's not getting a lot of traction. And I put it in front of you. How significant is the Washington Post basically called the sitting president a liar about what he said to get the job?
I mean, the Washington Post is the House newspaper of Joe Biden and this White House. So it's hugely significant to see this dam breaking. And you're starting to see other dams breaking. You know, something we didn't even talk about, the art buyers. Who's buying Hunter's art?
And who are they?
A major Democratic donor was identified by Business Insider, not previously a news outlet that's been covering this
story.
Is that
a problem? Is that a problem?
Well, I mean, so she buys the art, then she gets appointed to some presidential commission, the same commission that a different business partner was also previously appointed to. Move along, nothing to see here. And then we don't even know. Someone else spent $875,000 on 11 pieces of art. We have no idea who that is. And I hope it's only a Democratic donor and not like a Chinese businessman or something.
Well, who knows?
Who knows?
Hunter Biden's been painting for about a year.
Right.
And he's walking away with multi-million dollars.
Yeah.
Also, you know what increases him? If you hang it in the White House for a week,
yeah,
it now increases the figure. Do you know what he gave his baby mama? His art. Even though it sucks, he knows someone's going to buy it for a lot of money and have a rich person do the same.
It's probably a good deal. If I was the baby mama, I'd take it. That's going to sell really well.
Unless he gets outed. And this becomes apparent. And the people that buy them know
right.
that their name is going to be front and center.
That'll ruin the scheme. The whole scheme falls apart if the buyers get outed. Because then who wants to go through this? So, yeah, the scheme rests on people not being outed. So
I want you to hear this. Cut 21.
Did Burris pay him $183,000 a month with no experience and energy?
Mr. President,
no,
my son did nothing wrong at Burisma.
I think he did.
Mr. President,
let him answer.
He doesn't want to let me answer because he knows I have the truth. His position has been totally, thoroughly discredited.
By who?
And then you know what he said next? 51 Intel experts.
51 Intel experts.
Yeah,
yeah. And that's a whole other side show of this, because his campaign instigated the meeting with the Intel experts, Mike Morrell, and the people that signed that letter to get that letter going so Biden could use it as a talking point. They were in cahoots. This is going to matter. If Joe Biden was a one-term lame duck, I'm not running again, I'm going to call it quits. You and I might be like, well, this is all terrible, but he's going to retire in 2 years. But he's running for re-election, and this is going to be a major, major, major campaign issue, because he's going to have to go in front of the American people and answer Glenn Kessler and his other sort of propagandists who are now turning on him and saying, why did you lie to the American public? Why did you obfuscate and dissimulate about your son? And the media didn't have the story at the time, but you certainly did. And why weren't you straight with the American people?
Jon Levine, who's been leading the coverage for the New York Post along with Miranda Devine, is here in studio, as everything he's been saying for the past 2 years is coming together with the people who were players, not named Biden, but about Biden. And I've always said it's not about addiction. It's not about loving hookers or porn stars. It's not about all that stuff. It's about how it links to the family business and how it affects his foreign policy.
Right. And they're very insidious, the Bidens. They're going to try to make this about porn stars and drug addiction. Biden is going to go on TV.
So is the Democrats. I've been watching other channels.
Yeah, this is the strategy.
He loves his son.
He loves his son. He had a drug problem. Like many Americans, he had a drug problem, and he got into a little trouble, but I love my son. That's what they're going to try, and then the Republicans are being mean. They're bullying my poor son with a drug problem. They're going to try. They're banking on the whole thing being too complicated for Americans to understand, and it's just going to be mean Republicans making fun of my son who was a drug addict.
And I hope it is for his sake, former, but when there's coke in the White House and you have a cokehead as a son.
Who brought the coke?
Right.
No
one cares.
And it's like there's a cokehead in the White House, and we find coke in the White House. Was he drug tested? And they won't even answer it, and the media won't ask it. And you are called irresponsible. Karine Jean-Pierre will call you irresponsible for asking that question. She called our reporter irresponsible.
All right. If you're Tony Bobulinski, the only person probably more frustrated than New York Post full-time employees, Tony Bobulinski, because he told you all this 2 years ago.
Look,
He had a press conference, and no one wrote what he said.
No one asked
to be an interview. He said, "Jake Tapper, call me."
Yeah. He was a guy who worked with Hunter Biden in these business arrangements.
Met with Joe. Beverly Hilton.
And he just said what he knew. I mean, he had everything to lose by coming forward. I wouldn't say that his life is dramatically improved. He's not selling a book or anything. And he said what he knew, and everything he said was true. And now we have, obviously, a second business partner coming forward in Devin Archer, also validating many of the same claims that Tony Bobulinski made.
I don't know what your research shows, but I was off until yesterday. And Devin Archer in that 2018 exchange seems to be very tight with Hunter Biden. And I thought to myself, how forthcoming would he be on Monday? Do you know if that relationship still exists? Because judging by the charges he'd be convicted of, Devin Archer is a pretty bad guy.
Well, right. Like, Devin Archer is not.
But he's taking money from Indian tribes?
Yeah. He
losing millions of people?
He defrauded Native American tribes, and now he's got to do a year in prison for that. He's not a great person here. And I think it underscores the fact that Hunter Biden associated with very shady people who were very free to commit crimes of their own. But, you know, Devin Archer has a story to tell, and I think I don't know what his long-term end game here is, but I think certainly he doesn't have a relationship with Hunter anymore, especially not after Monday.
Right, but he didn't come out and say Joe's influence allowed this business to exist. Joe got 20%. He didn't do that. He said, No doubt about it, the Biden family brand allowed us to be successful and get access to these countries.
Well, he said Hunter would call back to D.C., but what is D.C.? Like that, we didn't really get an elaboration of that. But that could mean it's a wink, wink, nod, nod. We know what D.C. – if Hunter's calling D.C., right. who does Hunter call in D.C. when he needs something?
What a knucklehead. The vice president of the United States is meeting with the president Hu of China and is apologizing to a 30-year-old business partner of his drug-addled son for not being able to get away from the president of China.
Right.
You should live for that moment. Can you focus on the country for a second?
Right. No, it just shows you where his priorities were at that. And that was what, 2011? 2012?
Yeah, 2011.
2011. Yeah, it just shows you. This goes back a long, long, long time. And it just shows you where his priorities were. And again, so when he's on the debate stage just totally BSing about this, I never was no involvement with any of this. He knew all of these people. And remember, he met with business partners in the White House. That's like this business about like, well, we've finally proven that he was involved in the business. We've known this for years.
Right.
We've been talking about this for years. Some other people, if Johnny Come Latelys, have finally started to come around to it. The New York Times published such a damning statement, buried, of course, in one of their articles. It's long been known that Joe Biden had involvement with Hunter's business associates. They buried that.
I did not know. This is the first time I'm hearing this.
I will send you that when we're off. And it was buried paragraph 21. Like all the best stuff at the Times gets buried when they have to do it. And it's an insane revelation because I'm sure that came as a shock to a lot of Times readers who've been told by that newspaper and the other sort of Bermuda news triangle that they all live in that there was no connection. It was right wing myth. It was a lie from the lips of Vladimir Putin.
Right. John Levine, I can imagine how frustrating you are, but yet heartened that this is finally accelerating at warp speed.
Yes, I'm tired of being right.
Okay, Mr. Trump. Thank you very much. I'm tired of winning. All right, John Levine, thanks so much. New York Post, pick up the Post. They're always ahead of the curve. When we come back, I'll take your calls. And also Bruce Blakeman at the back of the hour, Nassau County executive. If the Republicans cannot hold on to their seats, they cannot hold on to the House. He is one of the most powerful Republicans in New York. We'll talk to him next. Also about the serial killer on Long Island. How many more bodies are they hunting for in Massapequa? Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
What happened in the last 48 hours? There's no way to sugarcoat this. It's bad news. It's basically a rating agency saying your faith in the American government to pay you back has been diminished from a AAA to a AA. And that has nothing to do with any one event. It's just a long-term grind on debt being issued by the company, regardless of politics at all, and the propensity to pay it back.
So if that, of course, is Kevin O'Leary of Shark Tank, a great businessman in his own right, talking about the Fitch Group actually downgrading U.S. debt. So what's the big deal? Who's Fitch and why does it matter? Well, we have basically the highest debt since we've had since World War II, and we're not in a world war. Some of this not our fault. 2008 collapse, not your fault, not my fault. Printed money to bring it back. Had a whole, we know how the TARP and all everything, how that worked out. And then we have a situation where the pandemic hit and we printed a lot of money. So now we have $31 trillion in debt. And they looked at that and they said, we're going to downgrade you from AAA to AA plus. And the Wall Street has reacted. We've lost 141 points in the big picture. And we are the world's number one currency. And people lose faith in that. We don't have the currency anymore. The CBO projected the debt would reach 107% of the nation's GDP by 2029, which means as a country, we have to go in on entitlements. Entitlements. Medicare, 10 years. Social Security, 10 years. That's going to contract unless we do something. But spending more is not going to do it. Do we have the political courage to do it? Republicans and Democrats coming together. Something like this could help. But instead, the administration blames Donald Trump. Now, the insurrection didn't help, but this is not Trump's fault.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. In about 15, 20 minutes, we're going to go on Fox Business, do a simulcast with the great Stuart Varney. But for now, let's talk to Bruce Blakeman, Nassau County Executive, one of the outstanding ones in the country. And you look at what Nassau County is, it's more dense than a lot of states. Am I correct?
We're larger than 10 states in population.
That's incredible.
Our gross domestic product's larger than 144 nations in the United Nations.
You were at Yankee Stadium the other day, and you're here in studio to talk about one incident. You were about to meet a good friend of yours now, Alexa. But I do want to talk to you about some serious things. In my town, Rex Uhrman's been nailed as the Gilgo. It looks as accused of being the Gilgo serial killer. Number one. They're complaining they've wrecked the house. The FBI and everyone's wrecked the house. What do you guys say about that?
Well, first of all, the most important thing for me as county executive is to make sure that that neighborhood gets back to normal. So we've passed emergency measures, and in conjunction with the town of Oyster Bay Supervisor Joe Saladino and the mayor of Massapequa Park, Mayor Pearl, we're instituting emergency measures that you can't even stop your car on that street. If you do, you will be ticketed. We have the police out there in force. We want the neighborhood to get back to normal. We don't want it to be some hideous tourist attraction.
Like at the Amityville Horror.
Exactly. So, you know, when we were kids, we went out to that Amityville house.
People still go by.
I know.
That's one town over, by the way.
We do not want that to happen here. Massapequa Park, they're great communities. And we want it to get back to normal. It was an aberration that this really horrible person lived in the community. We wanted to get back to normal.
I know Gilgo, Suffolk County.
Yes.
So even though this happened, he lives in Nassau County. But from what could you tell me, they've linked him to three, maybe four murders?
Yes. Definitely,
what else could you tell us about what they're trying to link
definitely
him to?
Definitely three. They think there might be a fourth and there might be more.
But they did not say there was any linkage with Atlantic City killers. That's one thing
that was ruled out yesterday.
All right. So where are you looking?
Well, first of all,
Are they still going through Gilgo?
I don't think they're going through Gilgo. I think what they're doing now is taking the evidence that they've already collected and trying to see if there's any attachment with the defendant that they have now. But Ray Tierney, who's the district attorney of Suffolk County, was very smart when he got into office. He put together a task force with the FBI, the state police, obviously Suffolk County Police, and our department, Nassau County. And that's how they were able to crack this case.
Let's talk about another major thing. And I was talking to another lawmaker in New York. If the House is going to stay Republican, all the pressure is going to be on New York. And you guys flipped how many seats in New York in order to get the balance of power in the House? This is a blue state.
Yes. Yeah, so we had a great year last year, and we were able to flip two seats in Nassau County. Anthony D'Esposito won the South Shore seat. And unfortunately, George Santos won the seat up on the North Shore. We're going to replace him. We're not going to run him again. We're going to run a really good candidate. And, you know, Kevin McCarthy's been in Nassau County a couple of times now. Scalise has been in Nassau County. It's very important that we keep the D'Esposito seat and the North Shore seat. So we're going to be working very hard, and we're getting help from Washington.
You don't have Lee Zeldin trying to shock the world, getting very close to being the next governor. Does that concern you?
Well, it's going to be
tough. He brought a lot of momentum.
It's a presidential year, but the more they do crazy things in Albany and Washington, and the more they move to the far left on a woke agenda, the more red Nassau and Suffolk County are becoming. I mean, Long Island right now, they're calling North Florida because basically the people have had enough with the liberal policies.
So if I understand, they're going to start dumping illegal immigrants into SUNY Old Westbury, SUNY Stony Brook. He says he's looking at 3,000 sites throughout New York. Does Mayor Adams, how much power do you have to stop him from doing that? It overcrowds schools. It affects student life for universities. You paying for this?
Well, Nassau County is not a sanctuary county, and so far we have not gotten migrants into Nassau County. So we will continue to resist it. We'll fight as hard as we can, and we'll have to go to court. We'll go to court.
We just saw you on with the Yankees at Yankee Stadium, and we just saw you with Dana Perino and the great Bill Hemmer. Tell us what brought you and Alexa together.
So the Stewart Manor Volunteer Fire Department has a 4th of July parade, which is kind of unique because the kids line up on both sides of the street for a mile and they pelt the marchers with water balloons.
One of which was you?
One of which was me. There were other politicians with me. We were marching the parade. So we're fair game. If you march in the parade, you know you're going to get hit. And I'm marching in the parade and all of a sudden I get an explosion on the back of my head by my ear that stung. But I wasn't going to let anybody know that it hurt. And I'm saying to myself, you know, who threw that pitch that hit me? And we didn't know. And the video surfaces. Her father took the video and we put it up on Facebook. And I said, I got to meet this girl. So she has some arm. I mean, she's got an arm like a Yankee or a Met.
Is it Alexa Cardacona?
Cardadona.
So, Alexa, hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
You were remarkably poised on television, equally poised on radio. Thanks for being here. Tell me about this parade and what you were looking to do.
Well, I was definitely trying to hit him, but not his head.
Right. Why did you want to hit the Nassau County executive?
I wanted something to do.
And it was part of the fun, right? You were allowed to do this. That's important. So where did you get an arm like that? I believe it was what? How many feet?
She was 100 feet away.
100 feet away. Number one, you got to get it. This thing keeps moving in your hand. So you got to wind up and throw it. Tell me your approach.
Well, I was just in the moment. It was like I wind it up back and let it go.
And what are your thoughts about where it hit and how it hit?
Oh, when it hit, I was like, oh, my God, I hope he doesn't look back.
You think he's going to come after you?
You know, never know.
So you got hit in the back of the head. What would your parents say?
They weren't too minded by it, so I was happy with that.
Right. So, Bruce, you said they thought you were Mike Pence?
So what happened was we put it up on Facebook. It went viral. We got like 2 million hits on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And then some Democratic operative said it was Mike Pence that was hit. So then it went viral again, everybody thinking it was Mike Pence. So that's another 15 million people that saw it. And then it went viral a third time when everybody said it wasn't Mike Pence. It was Bruce Blakeman that was hit in the head, the county executive of Nassau County. So we got three hits, and it ended up being over, what, 40 million, Alexa?
Yeah.
40 million hits between Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
Alexa, how old are you?
10 years old.
10 years old. Who told you to throw like that?
My dad and my grandpa's a retired New York City fireman, and he helps me too.
Right. So they taught you sports. Are you a softball player?
Yes.
So you know how to play?
Yes.
Right. So it didn't really surprise you that you hit him?
No, not really.
Right. But you're more of a soccer player?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
So I used to be on the Franklin Square Road Dragons, and now I'm on Albertson.
Right. Are you really good?
Yes.
I thought so. Because you kind of ascended. You get better to get on a team. So for you, it didn't end there. Why am I seeing video of you guys at Yankee Stadium? How did that happen?
So when it went viral with 40 million hits, I called Randy Levine, the president of the Yankees, and I said, you know, have you seen this video? And he hadn't. So I texted it to him. And I said, you know, it'd be great for the Yankees to have her up there. She's a Yankee fan. So Randy arranged for us to come and attend batting practice. And at batting practice, all of the players and the coaches saw the video already. And they were like, so you're the little girl that threw that rocket at Bruce Blakeman? And so Harrison Bader saw it, and Anthony Volpe saw it, and the hitting coach saw it. So she was already a big star.
And Alexa, tell me what happened.
So it was an amazing experience. We went there. We saw a couple of my favorite players sign some balls, and it was amazing.
Right. And you met some players, too, and they see it on video?
Yes.
Now, did your parents have a chance to go?
Yes, they did.
So they were there. So how great was that? Did you get to watch a game?
Yes, we did.
Right. Are you guys watching games at home? Are you baseball fans?
Yes.
Right. So your dad, mom and dad must have loved it.
Yeah.
Right.
And her sister.
And her sister.
And my sister.
All right. And how did she do?
Great. I mean, she's a star. You can tell. What a personality. She's got a great family. Her sister's great. Her mom and dad, they're really just, you know, salt of the earth people from Franklin Square. And we've all had a lot of fun out of this.
So, Bruce, you're a good sport. Because if I got hit in the back of the head and you said it actually hurt, I don't know if you just put it up, got the water out of your hair and just kept walking. I don't know if I would have been able to do that.
Brian, I've been in that parade before. And every time I get in, I say, I am not going to let anybody know it hurts. And I know I'm going to get beaned. And that's just part of the fun. And listen, I think it's good for politicians to get in settings like that, get out of their ivory tower, get with the people, and let the community make fun of their politicians once in a while. It's more real.
One thing about firefighters and cops, they're fun, right? Oh, they put on fun events. And what are you wearing right now?
I'm wearing my Nassau County Police Department polo shirt that Commissioner Pat Ryder gave us, a great police commissioner that we have. We've got the 11th largest police department in the United States, great men and women who uphold the law each and every day and put their life on the line for us in the community.
And thanks so much for introducing me to Alexa. Alexa, great. Best of luck with Albertson this year. And hopefully you'll end up in the Massapequa Soccer Club because they need some talent like you. All right?
All right.
All right. Thanks, Alexa. And
not
thank
in
you
baseball
so much.
And softball. They're going to the World Series.
Oh, I heard that. Yeah. Well, softball too, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Both.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everybody. In a matter of a moment, we'll do an FBN simulcast. It's great. We share audiences, so they have a chance to see. And you guys get a chance to see and hear and get two networks at once. Keep in mind, after we're done, I'll have a few minutes. If you want to get online, 1-866-408-7669 or email me, briankilmeade.com. We'll have a chance to talk. Also, coming up on Saturday, you don't want to miss One Nation. We have a great roster of guests, including Andrew Gruhl, who's going to be on a different hour on this broadcast. He's an outstanding chef and great opinion guy.
He will miraculously appear right there. Brian, Trump arraigned in federal court this afternoon. I think he's going to use today and future court appearances as a kind of a soapbox to get his message out. I think he'll hold center stage and dominate and talk about defending free speech. I think it's a plus for him. What say you?
Well, I think the contents of the case so far, 45 pages, if this is all they're going to do, unless they're going to do what they did in Mar-a-Lago and add additional charges, there's no conspiracy, there's no sedition, there's so much missing from this indictment that you thought that they might have uncovered some evidence that Donald Trump orchestrated this whole thing. They didn't. So there's a couple of things missing here that would have people really concerned that want to see Donald Trump get through this, and it's not there. This is feeling more like the Alvin Bragg indictment than the Mar-a-Lago indictment. It's feeling like there's a lot of holes in it. He has not announced a presser, but remember what he did last time? He went back and held his Bedminster rally. I have not heard of anything yet. So he's going to land in D.C., go appear, get you 2 minutes, get fingerprinted, and come out again. But I imagine he's not going to let this opportunity go by. But guess what else is happening, Stuart? We're not talking about Tim Scott, Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley. We're not talking about the debate coming up on the 23rd yet. It's all about Donald Trump. And most of the people are defending him outside Will Hurd and Chris Christie, who I have great respect for. They just are out of the Trump's world. The others say, yeah, I'm running against him, but this is ridiculous.
But what a contrast, Brian. Trump's kind of in the dock and speaking out outside the courtroom, presumably on freedom of speech, defending it vigorously. And the president is on the beach looking frail and unsteady. I mean, what a contrast here.
You know what he also was doing? He's looking like it has nothing to do with him. Oh, is there something going on? I don't know. You know why? Because He doesn't want to make it seem like he's going after his opponent. I have nothing to do. Listen, the Department of Justice has nothing to do with me. I never met Jack Smith. I'm just at the beach, you know me, just Joe. I'm off for 10 days. But he's all over this. He said it. He said it 1 year ago. I'm going to do everything within the law and the Constitution to make sure that Donald Trump is ever president again. Really? Yeah. Well, is this the game plan that you said the quiet part out loud while you sit there shirtless on the beach? Something I never thought I'd see, but unfortunately I did.
But you did. Yeah. Have you seen, what do you think? The Washington Post reporting that Obama warned Biden, hey, watch out for Trump in 2024. Obama says there's plenty of political strength there. You know what? I think Obama got this one right.
I do. But I gave this a lot of thought, not knowing you're going to talk about it, but just thinking about it. Why do we know about it? Now, was it an insider? Did Michelle let it slip in some Martha's Vineyard party we weren't invited to? It became out. He did it on purpose. And you know why? It's a message, I think, to Democrats. You want Donald Trump president? Don't tell me you have a problem with Biden. We have to rally. We have to rally. I don't care if you dislike Joe, but you don't want Donald Trump. And Joe Biden, and also Barack Obama said, I will do everything possible, Joe, to make sure you get elected. Let me know. He's going to lead the way. Also, if he came out of that meeting and thought Joe was losing it and should get out of it, and I want Gavin Newsom or Governor Pritzker, he would have let that go, too, because I still think he is the power broker. The guy that called up Hillary and said, Hillary, you concede, is the same guy that went and did a health check, I think, on President Biden. And then through an intentional leak, let everybody know Trump's formidable. I'm pretty sure the 78-year-old Joe Biden could assess that Trump is formidable. He sees the New York Times poll, the most friendly poll, in a dead heat with him. And three indictments. One.
Yeah, unbelievable, isn't it? Absolutely. That is unbelievable when you think about it.
Right.
Hey, Brian, I got to run, but thanks, man. I'll see you very soon, promise.
All right. See you in the hall. See you at the Christmas party. 1-866-408-7669. All right, we've got a couple of minutes here. Let's go out to Mike in Washington. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
I want to know why people aren't suing Jack Smith and the other people, just like Alvin Bragg is going after Trump. You have district attorneys and attorney generals all over the country that can sue this guy for harassment, election interference. These five attorneys can now sue him. I mean, file suits against this guy.
I don't know what that would do, and I don't know if he's I don't think he's vulnerable to a lawsuit. You might not like
sure
the case
he
brought,
sure
but why
is.
Do you sue him?
But you sue him for discovery. What's his evidence? Who's he talking to? Did he have any interactions with the Department of Justice and Biden? You most certainly can sue him.
Well, what they have is, just so you know, they have a Freedom of Information Act that, and I think Judicial Watch has asked for it to see that very interaction, Mike. So you're very onto something. I don't think it's a lawsuit's necessary. It's a FOIA request that would reveal communication. Steve, Pensacola Beach. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Brian, I was on with you right after Biden, right after Hunter.
I remember.
Yes. And Quinn Hillier from the Washington Examiner wrote a big piece comparing my cases. 27 years I served with distinction in the Army and Homeland Security. Never had a speeding ticket. I was topped with 922 G3, which was something less comparable to what Hunter went through. I tested positive for marijuana use. My responsibility, I take full responsibility. I went to federal prison for 15 months. First time offender. And this whole month, I've gotten people who had called and said, this can't be true. It is true. So if you don't think there's two-tier system of justice in this country, and when I was hit with that charge, I was not only, it hurt emotionally, but for my country to do something like that to me, and now this guy gets a diversion program?
Steve, I 100% believe you. I will add this. I'm looking forward to the second deal. It can't look like the first deal. And I think the real problem he has is his foreign business deals. It's going to be maybe millions of dollars more earned. We don't know where that money is, but he certainly didn't pay taxes on it.
Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. 1-866-408-7669. The great Karl Rove has been summoned, and he has answered the call. We appreciate that. And Chef Andrew Gruhl, founder of American Gravy Concepts, not only a legendary chef, but also a very outspoken person about the economy. Very America for putting America red, white, and blue, putting America first guy. So we'll talk to that great personality in a matter of moments. But first, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three. Was anything about those relationships inappropriate or unethical?
Nothing was unethical. Here's what the deal. My son has not made money in terms of this thing about, what are you talking about, China. I have not had it. The only guy made money from China is this guy.
Joe Biden blatantly lying in 2020 at the debate with President Trump. Liar. Once again, President Biden is shown to be a flat-out liar when it comes to his knowledge and role in Hunter's business dealings. As Archer's letter emerges with Biden's name on it and his transcript from his Monday meeting behind closed doors is out. You're not going to believe what's in it. We point out the 2020 lies that may have gotten him, may have lost the election for him, how it's been proven to be true. And guess who else called him out today as a liar? The Washington Post.
Number two. When do you expect you will meet that 40,000 mark to get on that stage? Can you give me a timeline?
Gosh, I do. I think it'll be about the next week to 10 days that we'll have that support. We've been averaging about 1,000 contributions a day.
What's taking so long? 2024, Mike Pence, of course. Trump titanic lead on the field does not mean Republicans have decided. The new poll gives hope to contenders weeks before the first debate, and the criteria has been announced for the second. We outline the defense and prosecution game plans and timelines.
Number one.
Yeah, I think it's a legitimate case. I think, unlike the document case, it's going to have issues of proof. I'm a little concerned about the slippery slope of criminalizing legitimate political activity. Worried about, you know, moving in that direction.
That is Bill Barr. Arraignment day number three for former President Trump. Protests, caravans, planes, takeoffs, and landings. 15 seconds of the Trump tape preceded by hours of breathless speculation and the Jack Smith charges and post-indictment insight. Brace yourself. We are on the defense and prosecution game plans, and what's likely going to be a big event tonight with Donald Trump. Karl Rove joins us now. Karl, so many times we go to you and go, okay, it's a new cycle. You've been here before. There's so much. We have never been down this road before. And then, of course, the transcript that was just released of Devin Archer. Welcome back. First off, the fact that the Washington Post has called out Joe Biden as a liar for Pinocchios, is that significant for you?
It is. And look, we all knew it. I mean, we knew that Hunter Biden was on the payroll of Burisma. We knew Hunter Biden was on the payroll of Chinese partnerships, where his partner was a state associated energy company. So,
but not in 2020. We were told people that had that information were lying. That laptop, 51 Intel experts told us that was classic Russian disinformation. So you're talking in 2023, but not 2020.
Well, you know what? We knew about Burisma. We knew absolutely that was a stinky, sleazy situation. And we had lots of evidence that Hunter Biden, what was Hunter Biden doing going back and forth to China if he wasn't making money at it? So there was every intimation when the laptop came out that there was likely to be a lot of accurate information on it. And the 51, national security experts who signed that statement are now, you know, try and find one of them to come out and defend it today.
Panetta did over the weekend. He said,
I missed that one. Well, so one out of 51. That's an astonishing vote of confidence in the quality of that statement. But look, I'm glad the Washington Post did it, because it is worth reminding people that they were misled by Joe Biden about his son's activities. And we now know from the Devin Archer tape, or transcript, excuse me, his taped deposition, that there was not only a lot of smoke there, there's a lot of fire.
So Karl Rove, our guest. Karl, just to give people an understanding of what's going on, about this transcript, some highlights. Archer said that Hunter used his powerful Biden name to add value. Joe's role, not overt. We would use his dad use his dad's name for it when we had to. The Biden brand, large part of the value, but not all the value of the company. He put dad's on speakerphone 20 times minimum with different business partners. Archer said we would say things like we had a unique understanding of D.C. and how it operates. That was what they'd use. So for people like Dan Goldman to say, I don't see any overt, I don't see any role for Joe Biden. That's just not the way it's done. And then $83,000 a month for Burisma. He says Burisma survived as long as it did because of the Biden brand. And Cafe Milano meeting, well, with the Moscow mayor, Yelena Batria, said, guess what? It was preceded by a payment of $3.4 million. So Joe's in that meeting in Cafe Milano. So what do you think the American people would have thought had they got this out in 2020?
Oh, they wouldn't have liked it because it's sleazy. And I mean, think about it. Oh, yeah. Well, we had him on the phone 20 times, but it was just to say hello. I mean, really? Yeah, you're sitting there. You're telling people that you are wired into Washington, and you're wired into the administration, and you can get things done for them. And oh, incidentally, just so happens that the Vice President of the United States is sitting nearby. He'd love to say hello to you and ask how the weather is in the place where you are. And I mean, come on. Burisma, think about this. Devin Archer is the longtime associate of and political bagman for the sitting U.S. Secretary of State, John Kerry. Hunter Biden is the son of the sitting Vice President of the United States, who is in charge of the policy of the United States government to encourage Ukraine to crack down on corruption. And these two guys have no experience in corporate governance, no experience in Ukraine, and no business background in natural gas, Burisma's business. And why are they there? Because in the old Soviet bloc, if you got in trouble with the authorities in Warsaw or Prague or Bratislava or Kiev, you hired Americans in order to say, don't mess around with us because we got stroke in Washington. And the two guys on the Burisma board are the running buddy of the Secretary of State and the son of the Vice President. I mean, please, are we so stupid as to not be able to draw a line from point A to point B and understand what that's all about?
I don't want to look back, but I think it's important because we might have a rematch, or at the very least, Joe Biden is going to be on stage having to defend his record and his background. Remember this moment, October 2020, debate with Trump. The moderator is Kristen Welker. Cut 18.
In retrospect, was anything about those relationships inappropriate or unethical?
Nothing was unethical. Here's what the deal. My son has not made money in terms of this thing about, what are you talking about, China. I have not had it. The only guy made money from China is this guy. He's the only one. Nobody else has made money from China.
Cut 19.
Once you
None
became
of that
vice president,
true.
He made a fortune in Ukraine, in China, in Moscow,
that is simply
and various
not
other places.
True.
He
my
made a
son,
fortune.
Gentlemen, my son.
And he didn't have a job.
Trump was 100% right.
Yeah. And look, Biden could have, the original problem here was when Biden found out about his son being on the board of Burisma, that he did not, which it was public knowledge. He knew. And I bet you a dime to a dollar that people inside the Obama White House talked to him about it. That's one of the interesting questions that has to be asked. We ought to ask it of Barack Obama. We ought to ask it of Susan Rice. We ought to ask it of the chief of staff in 2014 and 2015, when this was all happening. Did the Obama White House consider it a problem, and did somebody talk to Joe Biden? What should have happened is Joe Biden should have picked up the phone and said, you know what, son, I know you're going through a rough time. I know you got to make a living, but you have put me, and more importantly, our country, in an awkward position. Resign. You and Devin, get off of that board and find another way to make some money.
So a couple of things. I just want to hear more of it. Cut 20.
China ate your lunch, Joe, and no wonder your son goes in and he takes out billions of dollars to manage. He makes millions of dollars. And also, just out of curiosity, the mayor of Moscow's wife gave your son $3.5 million. What did he do to deserve it?
And we still don't know the answer to that. But we know that Joe Biden joined the meeting in 2014 with the mayor's wife.
Yeah. Now, of course, let's be honest about this. Once again, Trump exaggerates. He managed billions. Look, this is a guy who can't manage his own pocketbook, his own wallet. So the idea that he was somehow in charge of billions of dollars is ridiculous. He was being paid money because he was the son of the vice president of the United States, and people thought that that was some kind of an insurance policy, and they were willing to pay the high premium.
And for Joe Biden, keep in mind, you can't say, well, I did it for my son. I showed up at parent-teacher night. No, according to the rest of that laptop, the 20% of the or 10% of the big guy was real, right? Remember, he was talking to his daughter saying, I will never do what Pops does to me. I'm the sole provider of this family.
Yeah. You know what, though? On the one hand, we don't trust Hunter Biden. And on the other hand, we're supposed to expect that this is accurate. I think that is the addicted, troubled, dangerous man trying to justify his behavior by saying, I'm having to support Pop and I have to give 10% of it. You know, I can't support my daughter because I am.
Well, Bobulinski said 10%. Keep in mind, Tony Bobulinski said the same thing. We knew we never should bring up Joe Biden's name, but we knew he was getting 10%. So Tony Bobulinski, not on drugs.
Well, I want to see some proof on that before I go there. It's bad. I'm willing to say that this is Hunter running his mouth in a way to his own advantage. And think about it. He's telling his daughter, I can't be supportive of you because I'm pressured financially. I got to support Pop. Now, we don't know. If there's evidence, then by God, we ought to be told about it. But so far, this is Hunter. Hunter running his mouth. We don't know. We don't have facts. We got facts on a lot of the rest of this stuff, particularly from the payments that he received that were part of the settlement, and that we've had confirmed.
I don't know. The text message back and forth that led to these deals that led him right to the same place. They seem to have lined up. So we'll see. Joe Biden got rich somehow.
One way or another, we'll see.
Yeah. So we have, at the same time, a race with President Trump and Joe Biden looking like it's going to be a rematch as of right now. As President Trump goes at 4 o'clock today for these charges, a lot of people running against him who have been against him see a witch hunt, does Karl Rove.
I'm guided in these things by Bill Barr, Andrew McCarthy and David French, and there's no agreement between the three of them. I'm not a lawyer. What Donald Trump did in fomenting these theories about the election being stolen and trying to pressure the vice president of the United States to undertake a role that he has no right to undertake under the Constitution are reprehensible. The question is, are they illegal? And frankly, I don't know. And, I don't appreciate what Donald Trump did. But I'm not certain that what he did necessarily is criminal, maybe reprehensible to have taken. I mean, he had 60 shots in court to bring up any evidence of systemic fraud in these cases. And he lost in every case, including the toughest judgment was rendered by a Trump appointed judge in Pennsylvania who said, you not only didn't have a proof for your allegations, you didn't even have specific allegations. So, I'm very, very down on what he did to the country by putting us through that. But on the other hand, it wasn't illegal. And let me give you a concrete example. In 2000, we had a guy named Al Gore who went to court and said, who didn't go to court, who got three counties in Florida to recount the vote. Even though state law said that you had to have a certain standard in order to have a recount, and if a recount was necessary, it had to be conducted in all 67 counties in Florida. And eventually, the U.S. Supreme Court held that this violated the Constitution because it was trying to run a recount under rules that were not in effect as of Election Day, and it violated the 14th Amendment because voters in three counties were being treated differently than voters in the other 64 counties in Florida. And why did they do this? We now know from David Boies, who is the lawyer for before the Supreme Court for Al Gore, that because the political director of the Gore campaign said, we can't abide by the rules and have a recount in all 67 counties in Florida because Bush's lead will likely grow. We can only win this thing if we have a selective recount, illegal selective recount, in three counties. And by a vote of 7-2, the Supreme Court said that was illegal. Now, should Al Gore, should he have been, somehow then charged in court and indicted? I don't know. I doubt it. But that's where we are. This, where does free speech end, and when does illegal activity begin? And this is not going to be an easy question to be resolved in this case.
Right. Here's Bill Barr. Cut one.
Yeah, I think it's a legitimate case. I think, unlike the document case, it's going to have issues of proof. It's a more complicated case. And I think there are some downsides to it. I think there were reasons not to bring it. I've said before, I'm a little concerned about the slippery slope of criminalizing legitimate political activity.
So he sees down the line, this is going to be a problem. And remember the protests after Trump won the first time? Joe Biden had to gavel down his own party.
Yep.
Last thing, how do you feel about Governor DeSantis accepting the Newsom challenge for a debate in November? Good move?
You know, it elevates Newsom and is high stakes for DeSantis. If he has a good night, it elevates him. But it's putting a lot of emphasis on a debate that's distracting from the message. I mean, his message has got to be, here's why I ought to be president, not here's why Florida is better than California. That's not a bad message. Don't get me wrong, but it's it's going to take away a lot of time. Look, you don't have a lot of time in a presidential campaign at this point. You are running, you know, and already he's got the debate in August later this month in Milwaukee that Fox is carrying. There'll be a later debate at the Reagan Library. He's going to have to prepare for those. Plus, he's going to now have to prepare for the Hannity debate with Newsom. Now, he got a great case to make. But, it's a high-stakes gamble.
I think he's got to go for a home run, a grand slam, because he's having trouble right now getting traction. Carl Rove, always educational. Thanks so much and insightful.
I would
give you a raise if I was control of the payroll. Back in a moment. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. In a matter of moments, Chef Andrew Gruhl will be with us, founder of American Gravy Concepts. Also, you'll see him a judge of many of these cooking shows. You'll also see him as outspoken on social media. Everything of inflation, the tip culture. We're talking about in California, converting toilet water to your drinking water. Are you okay with that? He's been a big critic, and justifiably so, of what's going on in California with the prices, and especially what happened during the pandemic. We'll discuss that. We're also knowing that it's going to be about 4.5 hours, and Donald Trump will be indicted for a third time. A third time he'll be indicted. And now we see so many problems with this case. It makes you wonder if they're going to do a phase indictment in order to steal the headlines. I mean, after Georgia, they're pretty much done with indictment. They'll max out on it. And after Georgia, how do you do it? Well, you add some charges to the existing indictments. So every time something happens with Devin Archer speaking out, with Hunter Biden speaking out at leaking the Joe, or Joe not doing press conferences, not getting rallies, not raising money, out comes a Trump story.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Well, it's crazy because there's not too many of these coal fire ovens in New York City. And by the way, John Zablicka, which you're showing right there, one of my favorite, basically, in New York. They're the best of the best. We got a lot of problems in New York City. There's trash. There's crime. We saw the thing on the immigrants earlier. You got private jets. You name it. Pizza is probably the last thing on the list that people should be worried about right now.
Right?
To me, it was nuts.
And
like,
Dave,
if you fix everything else, then worry about the pizza.
That's Dave Portnoy from Barstool. Famously, he's got his pizza contest where he tastes all the pizza and tells you what's good or not. And he's just upset, like many people are, to get rid of coal-fired pizzas as if that's a priority in our country. But it is in very green-oriented New York City. How does Chef Andrew Gruhl feel about that? Founder of American Gravy Concepts. And a very successful entrepreneur in his own right, and goes to bat for the industry that he dominates as a celebrity chef. Andrew, welcome back. Well, welcome, I should say.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
What was your reflections on this whole coal fire pizza thing and what Dave Portnoy said?
Well, first, when I heard about this, I thought it was parody. I honestly thought this was like a Babylon Bee headline. And then when I looked into it and I realized it was real, you know, I agree with Dave, obviously. I mean, he's the pizza king. And as somebody who actually owns a pizza shop in California that was forced to go electric, I understand the perils and the tribulations of trying to create a good pizza off of essentially a glorified microwave.
What do you say to people who all of a sudden pizza guys don't have a huge margin of profit? Now they got to go invest in a new oven and a new vent. And that's a big project.
Yeah. Well, from a financial perspective, this actually is a game changer in the sense that it'll knock out most of the small independent artisanal pizza shops. People say, you know, online, of course, this became a huge fight and, you know, it's divisive. Oh, it's only just a little contraption you got to add onto your pizza oven. We're talking $25,000 to $30,000. But to really have them stick it to all the pizza shop owners, you have to pay for the inspector to come and tell you what you need to do with your pizza shop. $25,000 to $30,000 plus paying the inspector and then ultimately upkeeping this new equipment, that's going to put anybody out of business.
Right. No question. And just think, this is the same city that just fanned out with inspectors. If they found someone in the kitchen with a mask below their nose, $5,000, $5,000, $2,000, everyone was sitting there paranoid. Finally, I talked to a few owners, said, you know, my guys are working hard. You know how sweaty that is. You do this for a living, how hard it is. They're grinding it out. Their mask is down. They get fined. Some of the owners say, hey, listen, you're going to have to pay it yourself now. I mean, the city became an enemy of the restaurant business.
It did. And I've been saying this for
and
years.
And California, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, look, you know, they're kind of brothers in arms there. I've been saying this for years. Restaurant owners are the enemy of the state. And here's why. They hate entrepreneurs because they want the state to run all independent businesses. And restaurants are the way in which people become entrepreneurs typically, right? How many times you talk to someone, well, I think I want to open a restaurant. Well, I tell everyone it's crazy. That's kind of the gateway into becoming an entrepreneur. So they got to make you the enemy, and they got to make sure that you don't start trying to do your own thing and become independent, because if you do, then you are trouble.
Which, when people talk about cutting regulation, people think big stories. They're really smaller stories, because the small business, the delis, if you start hitting them with all these regulations, the margins are so small that you drive them out of business. And a lot of this green technology, this green push, is taking aim at you guys.
Of course. And let's look at what's going to happen is that if you take out these small guys, these spaces aren't going to be retrofitted into direct retail. They're still going to be restaurants, and they're going to be outfitted and permitted as restaurants. Well, who's going to come in? It's these large guys that are coming in, the large guys that are effectively merging with the government, you know, the 500-plus unit chains who are effectively, you know, turning food into plastic, and then they're just going to take over everything. And the government loves that because they merge with them. And really, I mean, that by its own definition is fascism. And you've got a few people that merge with the government and run our entire food system as opposed to all these independent entrepreneurs. It's the independent entrepreneurs who create the jobs, right, who become the family of their local community. This goes beyond just the food and the business. It goes into the actual community and the fabric of that community, which is food.
Absolutely. I want you to hear, too, it's not just going into restaurants and blowing up pizza kitchens. They're blowing up your kitchen. They want you to go to electric, and soon they're going to come for the restaurants. I don't know how you do it without gas ovens. Here's the press secretary being asked that question about the appliance crackdown.
So from this administration, we've seen them go after gas stoves, air conditioning units with regulation, refrigerators, washing machines, dishwashers, now water heaters. How many more home appliances will Americans eventually have to replace then because of regulations?
So just to be clear, when it comes to water heaters, and it is proposed what has been put forward, and if it is enacted, it would not take it into effect until 2029. So let's not forget that. So we want to make sure that we have the facts out there. And if and when it is enacted, it's going to help consumers save about $11 billion a year. That's what the president wants to do.
Feel better?
No, because the way she wiggles and kind of wanders through that makes it as if it's going to be something way in the future, and this is good for the climate. If they enact this, the changes are going to be made today, right? Because the industry has to start to make those changes. So even though it's coming, it's still going to be forced down our throats, and it's going to cost a ton of money because they'll start removing the products from the supply chain that we can still use today because they know that the change is coming. And those new products, policy doesn't necessarily kind of match with culture here. So they're pushing culture. And policy doesn't – the products aren't there. So they're going to be incredibly expensive right off the bat. Needless to say, what she's talking about right there is going to cost the manufacturers $600, I think, to $700 million is what they estimate in order to make these changes.
Andrew Gruhl, our guest, celebrity chef and founder of Slapfish, When you start your restaurant in 2012, what do you learn about business that really educated you to the point where you wanted to get your message out to the social media?
Well, for me, it was my first foray into understanding the strong arm of the government, right? Little things that I thought were somewhat insignificant or decisions that I could make myself, especially in California, the government had to make for me. They were inefficient, and it cost 5 to 10 times more money. And in the long run, it either was scrapped as a government program or it didn't actually meet the ends that the goal of the government program. It was just jobs. So I realized that the number one enemy in the very beginning of running my own business was ultimately going to be, especially in California, the state government. But now we're seeing this kind of, federal contraption that's distilling down into state governments that's controlling our lives.
Can you give me an idea of some of the regulations?
Yeah, so I was about to open up my business. We were bootstrapped. It was like $130,000 to open up my first brick and mortar. Friends and family, $5,000 here and there. And right before I open up, they come in, the inspector, and says, well, you're going to need an underground grease trap, even though we were grandfathered in. And even though it's coming in a year or so, before you open, you need to put this in today. $25,000 one day before I opened and marketed my business. I ended up having to take out 1 million high-interest loans, which if I wasn't scrappy enough would have put me out of business. And I ultimately paid it off and kind of, fought the force. But that's just one example where they come in and arbitrarily tell you, you have to do this because the policy is changing and it's going to cost you this incredibly excessive amount of money.
Who sends that? Like, how does that attitude drip down to the inspector that walks into Andrew Gruhl's restaurant?
Well,
where does that come from?
That's a great question. The overall attitude, I think, from the street level inspector isn't necessarily we want to screw the small guy. Instead, it's more along the lines of I need to – job security, right? It's the bureaucracy. It's the system. I need to be able to come back and reinspect. We know that we need more money coming in. We want these programs to get bigger, not smaller, so that we can grow the size of the government even on a local basis. And the more regulations that we create, then the more boxes they have to check and the more work that they have to – kind of complete.
You might have trouble doing it now, not now that you have established a success, but establishing yourself. When you look at the interest rates happening right now and inflation, people say, well, it's going down. It's not a problem. I was seeing some of your Twitter feed. You think it's still a problem?
It's a massive problem because there's no cash available for small business owners. They all talk about how, oh, we're creating these government-backed loans that are going to be available. That's not true. The only way you can get any of these loans as a small business owner, even outside the restaurant industry, is if you already have cash and capital. SBA to me is a joke. You can't get cash and capital unless you're already connected. So it's a rich man's game. You've either got to be have a ton of grit and figure out how to get through the system, which not that many people do, especially when they see the bureaucracy coming after them because it's scary, or you've got to be able to have, deeply funded partners.
Wow. And right now you were able to not only survive, but in California, what made you a survivor in the pandemic? And then you started a program to help others.
Yeah, well, it's about the community, right? So you got to bring the community together. And the government talks about, how much they help, but they really don't. So it was during the pandemic that we realized so many people were out jobs, restaurant workers specifically. The government wasn't doing anything to help. Yeah, you can have unemployment, but since they misappropriated $60 billion in unemployment funds, sorry, you'll get it in 6 months. So that's when we pulled a fund together and we actually raised over $500,000 to help independent restaurant workers get money to get them to the next step. And the power of community was so strong that was almost inspiring. There was a synergy that existed, and that's what kind of gave our business, the wind behind the sails to continue moving forward and pull people together.
Right. Do you get the sense that the American people want to eat out to eat more than ever because it was denied them for a couple of years?
Yeah. I mean, there's always the you want what you can't have, but also I think it's the community element. People want to get together. They want to just mingle in a community setting. It's that kind of town hall effect, and they want to go out to eat. We were stuck in our homes for so long. People just want to get out and enjoy something. It's not even necessarily about the food itself. It's about the experience. And, food is culture and food is unity.
Yeah, I always felt that way too. I don't mean to hurt your feelings, but if the food's just good, I like a feel of a restaurant more than people say, well, if the restaurant looks like crap, but the food is fantastic, I'm like, okay. I'm not food oriented in that way. You probably are.
Well, I am in the sense that I know I need to create a quality product and support really good local farmers and food producers. But also, I do understand that you need
to create an experience. I don't want to see paneling. I don't want to see the kitchen.
No. I mean, look, if you've got phenomenal food, then that's always going to be an added bonus. But service drives it more than food, I hate to say. You can have, mediocre food and great service, and people are going to come back. You can have phenomenal food and bad service, and people aren't going to come back.
Andrew Gruhl, stick around, okay? Because you're also going to be on this weekend on One Nation, because I think it's so important when people talk about the big numbers and unemployment and GDP. That's for the economists. But you're somebody who is really the American economy. Back in a moment.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Chef Andrew Gruhl is with us, founder of the American Gravy Concepts. You can follow him at Chef Gruhl, I should say. So, Andrew, during the pandemic, you were very outspoken. And you have a tell me what you did.
Yeah, so once Newsom started breaking all of his own rules and shutting restaurants down, but then keeping his restaurants open, I just had enough. And I had always kind of remained a little bit on the sidelines politically, and I just started speaking out. And, you know, it went viral and I started getting absolutely crushed by both customers and, you know, some of my contemporaries in the restaurant industry, but furthermore, even the media, and I became a target. What was really interesting about it is that when I made my real statement about Newsom and that thing blew up, about 8 days later, I got served an investigation by a labor commissioner in California on all of my companies that didn't even have employees. And, you know, they wrap you up in the red tape. There was nothing that was triggering it. There was no evidence of any wrongdoing. We've always been a phenomenal
weaponizing
employer.
Government against
yep,
you.
Yep. It cost us, I want to say, $70,000 to $80,000 just to – I don't want to say fight it because it was in an investigation stage. And do you know when it went away, when we stopped hearing anything from the kind of commissioner's agent, was the minute that the Newsom recall was approved to go on the ballot? Poof. Everything just slowly disappeared. It was,
why do you think that is?
I think because he just didn't feel like dealing with any of the backlash because I was making noise about it. And what I think is really funny is he did an interview with Jen Psaki probably 3 or 4 months ago, and he talked about how everybody in his office tells him that he needs to stop watching Fox News. It's an obsession, right? And he watches it 24/7. Well, I was on 24/7 talking about my viral video going off on Newsom, so I knew then and there he'd seen it, right? It's way too coincidental that – no joke, less than, you know, a week after I go off, this massive investigation is served, and there was no predicate to it, right? It wasn't as if there was a complaint that they were following up on. They wouldn't give us any information. We had to take it to a superior court to try and get to the bottom of it.
So you do that in California, outside Orange County and a few others. That's gutsy, right? Because you had to speak your mind.
Yep.
But a lot of these people are way to the left and took that personal. So they start staying away from your restaurant?
Yeah, but I'll tell you what.
But then again, you were shut down.
Our sales went up, you know, 500%.
They did.
The minute I started speaking out, I had people calling up with a credit card number saying, just ring in $1,000. We just want to support you. It was unbelievable, the support that we've gotten. And, you know, we talk about this parallel
economy.
But
you still had to pay a ton of legal fees.
Yeah, we did. I mean, those legal fees just buried myself, my family. We had just had a new baby. My wife was freaking out. She was named on all the documents. It was subpoenaing all of our personal bank accounts, all the business bank accounts.
Stress your relationship?
I mean, you know, just having a new baby stresses it.
I know. But can you imagine that sitting around going, oh, did you really have to say that? Now look at this. And
even fortunately, she's a fighter like I am. So she was actually saying, go deeper, dig harder.
That's awesome. So that happens. But what is it going to tell you what kind of politician he is? Revengeful? Do we really need another vengeful politician out there? You don't agree with me? I'll have to maybe force you to sell your company.
Yeah, it's not just that. I mean, we did end up selling the company, and then we restarted a new concept here in Orange County. And I'll tell you,
what'd you do?
So it's Calico Fish House. We've got a full service restaurant and bar now. You know what was interesting was getting that liquor license approved. About 8 months longer than it takes anybody else. Even our attorneys were like, wow, this is absolutely unbelievable. But they approved it. So
I saw the weaponization of the government, as I mentioned last segment, in that they were just killing these restaurants that opened up. Oh, there's not 6 feet apart. You have too many people at tables. You're staying open too late. Or, you know, people walking around without masks. You can sit down without a mask. You got to get up without a mask. I saw them, inspectors, while I was there, two separate times, walk right past the hostess, go right to the kitchen to try to stop a cook with the mask down. $5,000. Really? You kept them closed for a year and a half. You're making them fill up half the restaurant, and now you're fining them. What kind of attitude is that?
Well, the thing is that it's all being forgotten about. And that is indicative and it's emblematic of the way in which they're going to govern moving forward.
Well, he goes to the French Laundry.
Of course. And I think people forget about that, and that's what's crazy. But also the element there is that you're talking about government inspectors. What I saw even worse was the way in which they deputized citizens to basically do the same thing. These these COVID fanatics who would sit outside my restaurant, take photos of me talking to guests without a mask on, post them up on every single social site. The social contagion that's connected to the way in which they try and deputize people to turn on their neighbors, that's a scary thing because now you got millions of people.
Listen, I saw it, especially in a very blue state, and it's like Los Angeles. I could just imagine people walking around screaming at other people for not wearing a mask outside. Now what we know about wearing a mask outside, having kids play soccer and baseball with masks on. Remember this crap that was going on?
Yeah, and look, it's not completely under, you know, kind of under the underground. It's still happening. That's the scary part because it's become a culture.
I want to ask you about something else they're doing. They're trying to convert toilet water and purify it and put it back in the system. Are you okay with that?
No, because I don't trust the people that are doing it. I don't trust the government. I don't trust a lot of these large utility companies. We've already seen – how many mishaps do we hear about? I mean, over and over and over again, and it's kind of like the whoops. So for us to question that, whether it's that, whether it's cultured cell cultured chicken, all these things that are getting approved on the fly, when intellectually you're like, this doesn't make sense. Do I want to drink toilet water?
Yeah, meat made in the laboratory? Don't think so. Real quick, tipping. What's going on with the tipping craze? I buy a smoothie, they want a tip. I buy a salad, they want a tip. When should you tip?
Well, I mean, that's up to you. I think you tip on service, right? You shouldn't feel obligated to tip. You got to be able to do something to tip. But it's also a great incentive element. I don't think we get rid of tipping because it incentivizes people.
I was a waiter for a long time. I lived on tips. I made $2.35 an hour.
It's now the obligatory tip. That's the problem. And furthermore, what all these new IRS agents have done is that they're going back in and they're auditing all these tips because the tips now go through the credit cards. The credit card companies report the tips to the IRS. So a lot of people don't realize is that with these tips, the employee pays taxes on the tips and the business pays payroll taxes on it as well.
I'm going to bring this up on television over the weekend, but everyone, tip in cash.
Tip in cash.
Right? Give the waiter a break. They're not millionaires. They're just working hard for a living. Thanks so much. Andrew Gruhl, thank you very much. And we can follow him at Chef Gruhl. And I'll see you Saturday at 8 o'clock.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.